Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
Allied troops invade Germany, a prime minister assassinated, and a county fit for a president. It's March 1921.
100 years from today.
Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. 10,000 French and 5,000 Belgian troops have crossed the German frontier and moved into the Ruhr area to enforce reparations payments. They are occupying the cities of Duisburg, Ruhrort and Düsseldorf, the last with the assistance of two squadrons of cavalry from the British Army. France's General de Gaulle has posted a proclamation in German on all public buildings stating that, quote, "This occupation constitutes in no fashion a measure of hostility toward the population. Under the reserve of strict observance of orders, which the military authority will judge indispensable to promulgate, there will be no interference with the economic life of the region," unquote. The military occupation follows the ultimatum given Berlin at the London Reparations Conference that unless Germany agreed to Allied demands of 226 billion marks, that's about 56 million American dollars, paid over 42 years, her cities would be occupied. A German counteroffer of 30 billion marks was rejected, as was a revised counteroffer of 90 billion gold marks over 30 years, plus the provision of construction materials to rebuild damaged properties in northern France. We are a long way from the land of beginning again.
The Prime Minister of Spain has been assassinated. Eduardo Dato was being driven home from Parliament when three Catalonian terrorists on a motorcycle pulled up alongside his car and shot him. It is less than a decade since the assassination of one of Senor Dato's predecessors as Prime Minister, José Canaleas. King Alfonso III has chosen to honour Eduardo Dato's sacrifice by conferring a dukedom on his widow. In the United States, Warren G. Harding is now the country's 29th president. On his inauguration day, the Senate met in special session and confirmed all of Mr. Harding's cabinet nominees. Also on inauguration day, the state of New Mexico carved a chunk out of Union County and a chunk out of Mora County and created a brand new Harding County in the president's honor. The outgoing chief executive, Woodrow Wilson, rode with Mr. Harding in the motor car to Congress and walked with the assistance of a cane into the Capitol, but still not fully recovered from a bout of ill health, he was overcome with fatigue and left before the ceremony began. The former president and his Secretary of State, Bainbridge Colby, plan to start a law firm. Even though Mr. Wilson only practiced law for about 4 years, and that was 3.5 decades ago. Notwithstanding the Allied incursion into Germany, the new presidency also marks the end of the World War, at least in America. Congress has passed a joint resolution declaring that the wartime emergency is over and has repealed almost all the emergency legislation, including the Sedition Act. On his last day in office, President Wilson signed the repeal of almost all of the war laws, except for the creation of the War Finance Corporation, the sale of Liberty Bonds, and a prohibition against trading with enemy nations. The new Secretary of War, John Weeks, has announced that US troops will continue to occupy the Rhineland in Germany. In the Soviet Union, just a day after a rebellion broke out among Russian sailors on the island of Kotlin in the Gulf of Finland, the Kronstadt naval fortress has fallen to the anti-Bolsheviks. Elsewhere, Bolshevism marches on. Red Army troops have entered the city of Sukhumi within the Georgian Republic and helped Bolshevik sympathizers to proclaim the Abkhazian Soviet Socialist Republic. Where next? A communist party has been founded in Portugal. And in Italy, striking Croat and Slovene miners in Istria, supported by the Italian Socialist Party, have declared the Albona Republic in opposition to the pro-fascist mine owners. Prince Abdullah of Mecca, a direct descendant of Mohammed, has refused the offer of the throne of Mesopotamia, but has set his sights on territory to the west and entered the city of Amman, which he hopes, with British backing, will be the capital of a new kingdom.
I'd rather be a private than a colonel in the army. A private has more fun when his day's work is done. And when he goes on hike, in every town he strikes, girls discover him and just smother him with things he likes. But girlies act so shy when Colonel passes by. He holds his head so high with dignity. So would you rather be a colonel with an eagle on your shoulder, or a private with a chicken on your knee?
Would you rather be a colonel with an eagle on your shoulder, or a private with a chicken on your knee? Either is preferable to being a brigadier general with a price on your head. In Ireland, Brigadier General H.R. Cumming, DSO, has been ambushed and killed at West Cork, en route to preside over a court-martial of Sinn Féin revolutionaries. Brigadier Cumming and his escort had just crossed from County Kerry into County Cork when the attack began. The shooting continued for an hour, the rebels having with them a machine gun. The Brigadier General left his car, was shot in the head and died immediately. He is the highest-ranking officer to die in the present unrest. In reprisal for the attack, the mayor of Limerick and his immediate predecessor have been shot dead in their beds. Crown Prince Hirohito of Japan has become the first member of the royal family to leave his nation in more than 16 centuries. The future emperor boarded the battleship Katori at Yokohama to begin his voyage to Europe. Earl P. Halliburton has received a patent for his process of controlling well drilling by the rapid injection of cement. Mr. Halliburton is the proprietor of Oklahoma's New Method Oil Well Cementing Company, which is a somewhat unwieldy name and is more generally referred to in the industry as the Halliburton Company. Almost 900 people are dead after the sinking of the Singapore vessel, the SS Hong Mo, as it approached Swatow after departing Hong Kong and struck the White Rocks. No rescue was attempted until 2 days later, by which time the ship had broken in two, and of its 1,135 passengers and 48 crew, only 268 survived. Following similar tributes in Britain and France, the new US Congress has voted to approve the creation of an American Tomb of the Unknown Soldier to house the remains of an American military man whose identity will never be known.
In Lee Holland, in Lee Squall, Doc's in McKinley, I came by Net Buffalo. Do Washington. Roosevelt in the White House, he's doing his best. He lay in the graveyard, he's taking his rest. He is gone.
Dr. Matthew Mann was for many years the gynecologist at Buffalo General Hospital. Two decades ago, he chanced to be at the Buffalo Exposition when President McKinley was shot by the anarchist Leon Czolgosz. Dr. Mann had no experience in abdominal wounds, but made the decision in the fading afternoon light of a makeshift operating room at the Exposition First Aid Center to operate, to find and remove the elusive bullet, and gave his patient ether as the president recited the Lord's Prayer. Dr. Mann has now died far less dramatically at the age of 75. King Nicholas of Montenegro, who lost his throne when his nation was merged into the new kingdom of Serbs, Croats and Slovenes, has died in exile at Cap d'Antibes at the age of 79. His son, Prince Danilo, promptly renounced any claim to the throne in favour of his 12-year-old nephew. The following day, the prince renounced his renunciation, and then another 24 hours later, renounced the renunciation of his renunciation. His erratic behaviour has deeply disheartened Montenegro's monarchist community. General Auguste Mercier is dead at the age of 87. He was the French Minister of War at the centre of L'Affaire Dreyfus. In the summer of 1894, it was he who decided that Alfred Dreyfus was guilty of treason, and through these last 27 years has never wavered in that judgment, at least in public, until the day he died. Do you remember the eponymous heroine of Trilby singing that song? The playwright Paul Potter is best known as the author of the stage adaptation of that once notorious Bohemian novel
by George Du Maurier.
Trilby, you recall, is the name of an artist's model who falls under the spell of a fellow called Svengali. As successful as Mr. Potter's play was, its lasting legacy is not any memorable line of dialogue, but the distinctive short-brimmed hat with a sharp snap at the back worn by the lead actress in that first production. The Trilby has since become a most popular men's hat in Britain and elsewhere. Hats off to Paul Potter, dead at 68. World News Update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues with French, Belgian and British troops occupying German cities. Following the failure of negotiations on war reparations in London, the Allied Reparations Commission has now demanded that Berlin pay as its first instalment 1 billion gold marks by March the 23rd and 12 billion marks by May the 1st. The German government has responded that it cannot afford to pay such a sum, even if it felt it owed it. The former Grand Vizier to the Sultan of Turkey, Talat Pasha, wanted as a war criminal, has been assassinated in Berlin. Talat was one of the three leaders of the Young Turk movement and regarded as the single man most responsible for initiating the appalling massacre of the Armenian people. He and his wife had left their house at 4 Hardenbergstrasse in the Charlottenburg district when the killer walked past, turned back to confirm the identity, and shot Talat dead with a single round from a Luger pistol. With a second bullet, he wounded the Pasha's wife, all in broad daylight. The assassin was seized by angry passers-by who beat him severely until the police arrived. "We are both foreigners," the killer said by way of explanation of himself and his victim. "This has nothing to do with you. He is an Armenian student called Sogomon Telirian." As for post-Ottoman Turkey, the Soviet Union has recognized the government of the Republic of Turkey and Constantinople as the new republic's capital. The Bolsheviks march on with the Soviet conquest of the Democratic Republic of Georgia well underway. The French Navy cruiser Ernest Renan has transported Georgia's gold reserves out of the port of Batumi to be shipped to the Georgian government in exile in France. Almost 6,000 miles away at Altanbulag, the Soviet Union has established a provisional people's government of Mongolia while keeping the recently restored Bogd Khan on his precarious Mongolian throne. The Bolsheviks win some, the Bolsheviks lose some. In Yerevan, the Bolshevik government of the Armenian Soviet Socialist Republic has been overthrown. Who's the coming man in Moscow? Well, it looks like it's Grigory Zinoviev, a protege of Lenin, who has now been made a full member of the ruling Politburo. Great Britain has become the first Western nation to implement normal commercial relations with the Bolsheviks, with the signing of the Anglo-Soviet Trade Agreement.
They say that Lena is the queen of Palestine, just because they like her concertina. She plays it day and night, she plays with all her might. She never gets it right, but how they love it, one more of it. I heard her play once or twice. Oh, murder, still it was nice. She was fat, but she got Lena pushing on her concertina down old Palestine away.
They say that Lena is the queen of Palestina, but who will get to be the new emir of Transjordan? That's one of the questions before the Middle East conference that's just opened at the Semiramis Hotel in Cairo, convened by Colonial Secretary Winston Churchill to discuss the future of the new British mandates in Mesopotamia and Palestine. In the United States, Theodore Roosevelt Jr., son of the 26th U.S. president, now holds the same office in President Harding's administration that his father did in President McKinley's. Like Pa, Teddy Jr. is the Assistant Secretary of the Navy.
I met with Napper Candy, and he took me by the hand, and he said, how poor old Ireland, and how does she stand? She's the most distressful country that ever yet was seen, for they're hanging men and women there for wearing of the green.
Don't wear the green on St. Patrick's Day if it's your army uniform. The United States government has issued an order forbidding military personnel from wearing their uniforms in the St. Patrick's Day parades in Massachusetts. The explanation is that the troops may claim they're celebrating Evacuation Day, the day British forces left Boston after the siege of the city in the Revolutionary War, but the government is concerned it may be seen as US Army support for the Irish Republican rebels currently fighting British forces in Ireland. 6 months ago, Charles Comiskey, the owner of the Chicago White Sox, suspended 8 players charged with throwing the 1919 World Series in the so-called Black Sox scandal. Although only Shoeless Joe Jackson and Buck Weaver remain under contract with the White Sox, Mr. Comiskey has now sent all 8 men formal notices of unconditional release.
Maybe she might never leave her for more than a day. Horse said hundreds that lose them that way. So keep your eye upon your girl, Bill. For if you don't, a mother fellow will.
Keep your eye on the girlie you love. That's good advice from Ruth Roy. Even if she does call you Clarence when your name is Jake. The grand comic singer, celebrated as the Princess of Ragtime, is appearing this month at the Davis Theatre in Pittsburgh, and radio broadcaster KDKA decided it was time for another of its famous wireless firsts. On March the 4th, the station broadcast a simultaneous reading of President Harding's inaugural address at the exact moment he was delivering it in Washington. That wouldn't really work with Ruth Roy because her delivery is so unique, you can't just delegate it to a radio announcer. So instead, the station relayed the first live broadcast of a stage performance direct from the Davis Theatre. So now you no longer have to leave your home to enjoy Miss Roy. You can just switch on the receiving equipment, put on your slippers, and fill up your pipe.
Just put on your slippers and fill up your pipe. You're not going bye-bye tonight. Now no earthly use making that old excuse. Let me tell you, kiddo.
Do you like futuristic social drama? A Bill of Divorcement, a new play by a new playwright called Clemence Dane, has opened at St. Martin's Theatre in London's West End. The theatre programme advises that, quote, the action passes on Christmas Day 1933. The audience is asked to imagine that the recommendations of the majority report of the Royal Commission on Divorce versus Matrimonial Causes have become the law of the land. In other words, Clemence Dane foresees a world just 12 years in the future in which British women will be allowed to initiate divorce proceedings against an incurably insane husband. Nothing of the sort, we hope, will afflict the Princess Helen of Greece and Denmark, daughter of King Constantine, who has been wed in Athens to Crown Prince Carol of Romania, son of King Ferdinand. The English romance novelist Florence Barclay is dead at 59. Her tale of undying love, The Rosary, was the number one best-selling novel of 1910 in the United States. Jenny Kempton is dead at 85. Born in Dublin, New Hampshire, she was for half a century an acclaimed American contralto whose fans included Longfellow, Emerson, and Oliver Wendell Holmes. Francis Upton is dead at 68, best known as the man who assisted Thomas Edison in the development of electrical power distribution. He was responsible for many innovations of his own. His invention of 1890, the first electric fire alarm, did not make the impact it might have been expected to do, possibly because of an unfortunate typographical error which patented it as the first electric tire alarm. Pete Harrison is dead at 36. The English have no great feeling for baseball, but Mr. Harrison, born across the Atlantic, became a great major league umpire in America. Stricken by tuberculosis, worsened by influenza, Pete Harrison died at Saranac Lake. As the Boston Braves' Rabbit Marinville said, every ball player in the National League will miss Pete Harrison. S.W. Burnham is dead at 82. He had a rudimentary education at Thetford Academy in Vermont, but he became a great astronomer. Mr. Burnham discovered 451 new double stars and became a Fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society. He is now among those stars forever. Your World News Update, the messy aftermath of the Great War continues with Allied troops reoccupying German cities. The fate of the plebiscite in Upper Silesia was considered critical by the Berlin government as to whether it would be able to meet the Allied Reparations Commission payment terms, and indeed whether it could remain in the broader sense a global industrial economy. A southwestern section of Upper Silesia has already been ceded to the new Czechoslovakian state. Now, following the votes of the remaining electors, the Supreme Allied Council has ruled that the east of Upper Silesia will go to Poland and the rest remain with Germany. Grover Bergdahl was a convicted World War draft dodger who fled to Canada and thence by ship to Germany. Two American sergeants turned bounty hunters tracked him to the town of Eberbach and attempted to seize him at the railway station. Bergdahl managed to escape, and a female rail passenger wound up getting shot by one of the sergeants. Now the two Americans have been convicted by a German court of false arrest. Still in Germany, 30 civilians are dead in riots by Bolsheviks in Eisleben and Hettstadt. The police opened fire on the crowd and then, when that failed to quell them, hurled hand grenades into the throng. Following the failure of Greco-Turkish negotiations at the London conference, Greek troops have launched another assault on Turkish territory at Inonu. In happier news for the brand new Republic of Turkey, the post-Ottoman government has announced a new national anthem, the Independence March. Catchy. In the Soviet Union, the government has put down the Kronstadt Rebellion. The 7th Red Army has retaken the fortress, and the surviving members of the naval garrison have either surrendered or fled toward the Finnish border. 800 insurrectionists are said to have made it to safety in Helsingfors. Before fleeing, the Kronstadt Revolutionary Committee destroyed the Soviet warships, the Petropavlovsk and Sebastopol. Back in Moscow, by decree of Comrade Lenin, the Soviet Union has begun implementing its new economic policy. The ruling Communist Party describes it as a free market economy under the control of the state. In Georgia, the Constituent Assembly at Batumi has voted to put itself out of business and abandon the nation to the invading Red Army. The former Menshevik government of Georgia has negotiated a ceasefire permitting their safe evacuation to France and handing complete control of the country to Russian-backed Bolsheviks. Communism wins some, loses some. The Peace of Riga has been concluded, bringing an end to the Polish-Soviet War on largely Polish terms, including the partition of Belorussia and the Ukraine between Warsaw and Moscow. Back in Poland proper, Parliament has adopted a new constitution, formally declaring the country a republic headed by a president. In Italy, 31 people have been killed and another 100 injured in Milan when a nitroglycerin bomb exploded at the Kersal Diana, where a packed theatre was enjoying the new operetta by Franz Lehár, Die Blaue Mazurka, the Blue Mazurka. Thank you. Britain has amended its League of Nations mandate for Palestine to provide for a new emirate to be called Transjordan and to be located on the eastern side of the Jordan River across from the national home for the Jewish people proposed by His Majesty's government in 1917. Andrew Bonner Law shares with the Irish Republican Eamon de Valera the distinction of being the only party leaders born outside the British Isles. Mr. Law hailed from New Brunswick in Canada. He is now resigned as leader of the opposition at Westminster to be succeeded by Mr. Austin Chamberlain. The change in Tory leadership is thought to have weakened the position of parliamentary hardliners opposed to any truck with Mr. de Valera and his Irish revolutionaries. There is still no trace of the US Navy airship A5597, which departed the Pensacola Naval Air Station on a training mission and was last heard from about 20 miles away from St. Andrews Bay across the Atlantic following the recent destruction of its dirigible R-54. The British government has decided to give up on airships and the like and pursue instead development of aeroplanes. The British Air Service has offered to give 10 of its largest dirigibles to any syndicate interested in operating them for research. Maybe they would come in useful in policing John Bull's ever more fractious other island following the largest battle so far of the current troubles, the Crossbarry ambush in County Cork, in which 100 revolutionaries surrounded by 1,200 troops nevertheless managed to fight their way out. There has now been the inevitable reprisal attack at Headford Junction near Killarney. Rebels attacked a train carrying 30 Royal Fusiliers and killed 9 of them. The familiar reprisals are now followed by reprisals for the reprisals. 28 Irish Republicans have been killed and another 33 wounded by the army. In the United States, a dust explosion at the world's largest grain elevator has killed at least 4 of its employees and shattered windows within a 5-mile radius of the intersection of 122nd Street and Torrance Avenue in Chicago. Damage is estimated at $10 million and includes at least 7.5 million bushels of corn and the grain elevator itself, which was obliterated in seconds. Speaking of grain elevators, America has a new radio broadcasting station, 9JR. In the railroad junction town of Tuscola, Illinois, James Bush, proprietor of the James Bush Grain Company, has started the station in order to provide the latest grain prices to subscribers. So far, he has 2 customers, the owners of the grain elevators at Dorrans near Mattoon and on the Illinois Central Railroad branch line in Decatur. The grain prices are read by an enterprising 14-year-old boy, Master Curtis Marsh. In what is reported to be, quote, unprecedented in federal prison annals, the convicted socialist Eugene V. Debs was released temporarily from his imprisonment in Atlanta and permitted to travel by train, unguarded, to Washington, so that he could present his case for a presidential pardon to the Attorney General, Harry Doherty. The furlough was granted by the prison warden with the permission of President Harding. In Washington, Mr. Debs met privately with the Attorney General for a little more than 3 hours, then left at 3:30 in the afternoon and the following morning reported back to federal prison in Atlanta to continue serving his 10-year sentence. In sports news, the 80th Grand National has been held at Aintree Racecourse near Liverpool. In the course of the steeplechase, every horse but one fell. The exception, Sean Spadder, ridden by Dick Reese, won the race. Known to most of her countrymen simply as Concepcion, Concepcion Lombardo de Miramon was the longtime widow of the twice president of Mexico, Miguel Miramon. Señor Miramon was executed with Emperor Maximilian and General Mejia in 1867. Facing the firing squad, the emperor was entitled by rank to the center place among the trio, but ceded it to Señor Miramon out of respect for him. His widow Concepcion survived him by over half a century, all of it devoted to her executed husband's memory. She died a peaceful death in Toulouse at the age of 85. James Gibbons, the Archbishop of Baltimore, was only the second American to be named a Roman Catholic cardinal. He has died in office at the age of 87. E.W. Hornung is the author of The Many Adventures of A.J. Raffles, the gentleman thief and amateur cracksman. Many were surprised that one could profit from the apparent paradox of an heroic villain, but Raffles' exploits have spread from the printed page to the stage and the photoplay screen. Unlike his cricketing daredevil who could get out of any scrape, Mr. Hornung fell victim to influenza contracted on a train bound for the French Riviera. He was 54. Your World News Update, the messy aftermath of the Great War continues. Karl von Habsburg, the former Emperor of Austria and King of Hungary, has returned to Budapest in an attempt to reclaim his Hungarian throne. He entered the country on a forged Spanish passport and made his way to Szombathely undetected. At the royal palace, the regent, Admiral Horthy, was in the middle of his Easter dinner when the no longer King Károly IV knocked on the door and tried to persuade the admiral to return his throne. Admiral Horthy has to date remained unpersuaded, and upon hearing of the ex-king's presence in the country, the new states of Czechoslovakia and the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats and Slovenes have declared that a restored Habsburg would be cause for them to go to war with Hungary. Just south of that impending Czechoslovak-Slav war on Hungary, Greece and Turkey are already at war. The Greek army has advanced into the mountains and captured Adapazari and what they call Nicopolis and Dorylaeum. If you don't like last week's New Republic, well, there'll be a new one along any minute. Following the Soviet conquest of the Democratic Republic of Georgia, a new socialist Soviet Republic of Abkhazia has been proclaimed at its capital city of Sukhumi. The Bolsheviks may get their way in Georgia, but it gets trickier as they move westward. A few days ago, the Soviet Union asked the United States for a trade agreement between the two nations. President Harding's new Secretary of State, Charles Evans Hughes, has now replied, stating that Washington will not resume trading relations until, quote, a regime of productive order is established in Moscow. While the US government, quote, views with deep sympathy and grave concern the plight of the people of Russia, Secretary Hughes says that, quote, in existing circumstances, there is no assurance for the development of trade. If fundamental changes are contemplated involving due regard for the protection of persons and property and the establishment of conditions essential to the maintenance of commerce, this government will be glad to have convincing evidence of the consummation of such changes. And until this evidence is supplied, this government is unable to perceive that there is any proper basis for considering trade relations. In London, Britain's Labour Party is socialist but not communist, or not communist enough for Moscow's tastes. The Labour Party has voted by 521-97 to reject the 21 conditions demanded by the Communist Party of the Soviet Union before the Labour Party would be permitted to join the Comintern.
Wait till you get them up in the air, boys. Wait till you get them up in the air. You can make them hug and squeeze you too. Or if they don't, just say you won't come down until they do. So wait till you get them up in the clouds, boys. There won't be anyone to watch you there. When you get her way up high, have all the fun you can. There never was a girl who'd fall that far for any man. So wait till you get them up in the air, boys. Up, 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 way up in the air.
The Air Navigation and Transport Act, passed by the Westminster Parliament, has come into force, allowing relevant governments to regulate air traffic and navigation throughout the British Empire.
Wait till you get them up in the air, boys. Up, 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 way up in the air.
In Australia, the authorities will be assisted in that endeavour by the new Australian Air Force. The new Air Force has been upgraded from a mere Air Corps of the Australian Army into a standalone branch of His Majesty's Armed Forces. In the United States, Clyde Manning, the black foreman of white plantation owner John Williams, has led the police to various sites around Jasper County, Georgia, at which he and Williams buried 9 Negroes Manning said they had murdered. Another 2 black men have been found in neighbouring Newton County. They were bound and weighted and tossed off a bridge alive to drown in the Yellow River. The killings are said to have arisen from yet another peonage scheme by which Williams went to other counties, paid the fines of Negroes who had run afoul of the law, sprung them from jail, and brought them back to Jasper County to work their debts off in forced servitude. If Williams and Manning ever face the death penalty, they will be hanged for their crimes. In Nevada, if you don't care for the rope, you can choose a firing squad. If 5 men cannot be found to form a firing squad, you can get the same result via a shooting machine. But now the state has opted to replace both hanging and firing squad with a new method by which poison gas will be pumped into the convicted man's cell until he is dead. In Tokyo, a fire has destroyed over 1,000 buildings and caused $12.5 million in damages. In sports news, we have a new association football team on the international scene. A team representing the Dutch East Indies has beaten British Singapore 1-0. Radio broadcasting marches on. The government of China has signed a contract with the American Federal Telegraph Company to build the most powerful radio station transmitter in the world.
Where
Sasaram Dalishan Shah was an Indian linguist and administrator in several princely states, but his lasting contribution came in books like A Collection of Gujarati Proverbs, through which he established himself as a critical force in the preservation of the Gujarati language and culture. Mr. Shah is dead at the age of 79. His first great success, Captain Swift, was turned into a dramatic photoplay just last year, but the author will not live to see any further picture adaptations of his work. Sydney-born playwright C. Haddon Chambers is dead at 60. John Burroughs was an American naturalist, friend and companion of eminent men from Walt Whitman to Theodore Roosevelt to Thomas Edison, and a man who denounced the authors of popular animal stories as nature fakers peddling yellow journalism of the woods. He died while on a train travelling through Ohio, which is surely a bit of a dull way to go for a naturalist who led such an exciting life. Mr. Burroughs was 84. Nothing so prosaic for the great Berber warrior Muha Uhamu Zayani, a great scourge of French military forces in Morocco, the Kayid of the Zayans, died in battle against his son at Azalag Ntazamorte. And that's the way of the world. March 1921.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.